Okay, going on to movie number two that I haven't seen.
Okay, we are discussing The Constant Gardener. Presents are...
Mary, but I haven't seen the film.
Of course.
Jane.
Rodolfo.
Alan.
And Mark.
Eleanor.
Yes, I forgot. Again.
Eleanor.
I have a question. My first question about this film. Who's the director?
Morales. How do you say it? The guy who did City of God. The Brazilian.
Right.
Guy.
City of God?
What a different film.
City of God?
Yes.
The same director?
Yes.
And is this the same director of Gosford Park now?
No,
that's
what did
I
agree
to? Robert Altman.
I haven't seen City of God yet.
Oh, it's fantastic.
That movie.
It's disturbing.
Yeah. I'm thinking of showing it to my students, but it's very disturbing.
Show it to them.
Yeah. I already showed them Requiem for a Dream.
Disturbing students.
Oh, how did you show that?
Never again.
Which?
Requiem for a Dream.
Show them good movies.
I know. I wanted to show something modern because I show
a bad movie.
Which one, Requiem?
Requiem for a Dream. I thought it was garbage.
Garbage?
I hated it.
So nice.
I was trying to be smart.
But she's got it newer.
I know. Anyway, another tangent. Sorry, Lenore.
Okay.
What?
Okay. Yeah, you're right.
What?
I was going to ask her. Never mind.
Yeah.
It's tangent.
Not about the film we're discussing.
We are discussing The Constant Gardener, and presents are...
We did that.
I know, but we've been talking about something else the last 5 minutes. I'm going to have to cut it out.
I have to edit, okay?
How about Rick? Does he listen to?
We don't know.
Okay.
He's lurking, though.
He's lurking. He's definitely lurking.
He
chimes
in. Did you say we were going off on tangents that we needed to edit out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're saying. Okay.
We're still
not
talking about the film we said we were going to be talking about.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get us back.
So I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Me too.
I thought the cinematography was really, really interesting and beautiful, although depressing in many cases. But just really, really interesting and enhanced the film and the storyline. And I see just the cinematography. I think it's worth it just to see the cinematography. But the storyline was interesting too, really.
I can't understand what you're saying.
I thought the cinematography was really, really interesting.
It was complicated, yet it was so clear. I thought he did a wonderful job.
What was complicated?
His story. The way he told it.
What was complicated, yet?
The way he told it was complicated. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how complicated it had to be, because I never read the book or anything. But I just thought he did a wonderful job of getting it. It was very clear, even though it was kind of a complicated storytelling.
Right.
Yeah. I thought it was terrific. I think he's a really talented director. I just looked him up and I was reading that he didn't want to, he wasn't ready to direct an English language film, and this came to him and he decided to do it. So this is his first English language film.
I thought he was really talented. I thought the story was really complex. But I see what you're saying, that it was told really well.
Yeah.
You weren't lost. You weren't trying to remember, well, how does this relate to this? It was told in a sequence and in a way that you didn't lose anything, and you weren't, you know, stuck while the film was going on. You weren't trying to remember, now where's that fit into the overall thing?
Right.
It was all there. You didn't have to, like...
That's right. And also, I didn't find my mind wandering at all. Sometimes I forgot to pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was riveting. Yeah. I also thought that Ralph Fiennes did a fabulous job. I asked Paul about the pronunciation of his name. He said it's Ralph Fiennes. He said it's not the...
Ralph.
It's not the usual pronounced Ralph.
In England,
Ralph.
They say Grace.
No, Paul said it's not. He said, I think it's just an affectation.
Oh. What's an affectation?
The pronunciation of the same race.
Mm-hmm. That's an affectation.
That's a false affectation.
Right. But Ralph, so, like Ralph Vaughan Williams, the composer, is always Ralph Vaughan Williams.
Oh, really? So maybe it's just him.
I don't know.
Is it
South African?
No.
Well, Paul didn't think it was the normal English way.
Okay.
No. Well,
you want to know.
But I guess it's sometimes done. What I was going to say about him is once, I think he did a fantastic job in this film, and it's to playing the cuckold like that. You know, it turns out he's not cuckold, but he thinks he is, and I thought he did a good job.
I thought he was.
I didn't see
why.
No, the guy's gay.
Wait a minute. Doesn't she go to bed with
no, she no. said she is.
Oh, she didn't.
Yes.
But that, I missed that.
Yeah.
I didn't. That's,
you weren't paying attention.
Probably not.
Yes, he wasn't paying attention.
Yeah. Wait a minute. She said she was going to bed with whom?
She said, give me a letter and you can have me.
That's right. No, she's, but then she breaks her promise and feels that
it's
honorable, but she's going to do it anyway.
But I thought he did a great job. There's one thing about him I wanted to say. I saw him once in London in just in an art fair. This art market. You have to pay your £5 to go in. Maybe he didn't pay, whatever. And so there he was, he was wearing this white linen suit. And he was like, okay, I'm here. You can look at me now. And it's like, you know, he seemed like a creepy snot. And I thought he did a fabulous job in this film, coming off as so vulnerable and the cuckold and, you know.
When he's really a creepy snot.
Yeah.
He's a good actor.
That's why they call it acting.
Yeah.
So you buy his act as a creepy snot?
No.
Well, maybe he was affecting that because he doesn't want people coming up to him. You know, he's everyday, normal, and approachable, you know? So he.
There you go.
I get him and his brother mixed up. Which one is which?
Joseph Fine. He's
the one in Shakespeare in Love. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And what else has Rafe been in?
Oh, that thing I
English
everybody else liked right. and I didn't.
I didn't either.
That was overrated.
And I tried to read the book and I couldn't read the book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you didn't get into it either?
It was an overrated film.
Really?
Which one?
English Patient. It was really trying to be.
Trying to be what?
To be the big independent.
He was supposed to be independent?
Yes. It's totally. It's made by what's his name over in
Brooklyn?
Saul Williams. That was the big breakthrough, that it was an independent that won an Academy Award. But I know, independent by a certain definition, maybe not by our definition.
You know, by some definition,
that is an independent.
Somebody was telling me another tangent.
Yeah.
Constant, are you?
Lenore.
Yeah.
You see it?
I can't even hear what you guys are saying.
Tell us what you thought
of the Constant Gardener.
What about it?
What did you
think
of it?
We're talking about it now.
What did I think of it?
Yes.
Well, I thought it was powerful, and my only problem with it was I kept thinking, yet another film in the colonial voice.
Mm-hmm. In the colonial void?
Voice.
Yeah.
From the point of view of the colonial.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, I thought it was really well done for what it is, but I was a little... That kept nagging me. That was distracting me through it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really interesting. I never thought about that, but the fact is this. One thing I said to Paul after we saw it, and we both liked it a lot, is this idea of the civil servant, the British civil servant, they can be from the very upper classes. Mm-hmm. You go out to Africa. Yes, I went out to Africa.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she, the wife who died, was... that house she had was in like this neighborhood that was, you know, this is like rich, mm-hmm. rich. I don't think that is a criticism of the film though, because that is the point.
What?
I don't think of that as a criticism though. because it is the voice, so it is the, what, you know, the perspective.
Well,
being told.
You got to remember the audience that you may be trying to reach. You know, if you want to reach an audience with a message that has to do with colonialism and exploitation, then you have to reach them through their viewpoint.
I thought Hotel Rwanda did a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm. Who?
Hotel Rwanda
mm-hmm.
did not do it from the point of view of the colonial. Good point.
Yes. But I think there's something to be said for my point. that you know, like, the missing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jack Lemmon and Sissy Spacek. Definitely from way, way, way away from the perspective of people in Chile. And you hardly ever got that at all, the perspective of people in Chile. But it still made people, had a chance to reach people and turn people's heads around as to what was going on down there in a way that, you know, something that maybe was written and from the perspective of the Chilean people would have been just so foreign to white America's viewpoint that it wouldn't have been able to reach them, even if it had been something like a Hotel Rwanda.
Are you saying Hotel Rwanda didn't reach people?
No, I'm not. I'm not saying that that didn't. But
well, then I think
I'm just saying that if it reaches people, I don't care whose viewpoint it is. If it's reaching people and raising their consciousness, it's okay with me.
And I have a different point of view, and that is I think people who are from the upper class and from England still have the right to have a point of view. It's not their fault if they were born in the upper class.
They don't, but that's all the only point of view we hardly ever hear. That's my problem. If we had, you know, Hotel Rwanda for every Constant Gardener, I'd be a lot happier, even though there's a whole lot more people.
You should come down here, Lenore, and go to the Mill Valley Film Festival. It's full of films from the...
Well, I'd love to, but it's kind of a long
point of view. I don't know what to call
it. It is.
That's true, but that's where you find them, are in the film festivals.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get distributed, but there are a lot of films made, like, from... Yeah, by
well, interestingly enough, the same director's film, City of God.
I just don't think it's a valid point anymore to say people won't look at it unless it's from that point of view, because a lot of people saw Hotel Rwanda.
But I
wasn't saying that. But I what I was saying that... I think I said what I was going to say.
Yeah, and it is the Lenore Brazilian director.
Yeah.
But I just think... It's like criticizing Cezanne or Picasso for being a dead white man. It doesn't mean they're not brilliant. I
didn't say that. I said I thought it was really well done for what it was, but that was my one reservation.
But for what it was is a pretty big qualifier.
A pretty good what?
Qualifier. It's a big qualifier.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is. I am making a qualification.
Are you qualified?
Are you qualified to make the qualifications?
Sorry, Lenore. You're not here to defend yourself.
There she is.
Not here to what?
Mark is saying that you're not here to defend yourself, but I said, yes, she is here.
Oh.
Her voice is here, her ears are there.
Can I make a sidebar? I just remembered something. People asked at the beginning, have they seen any interesting films? And last week, I saw this film called I Am Cuba.
Oh, isn't that amazing?
Oh, you saw it.
I saw it years ago when they released
it. Yeah,
they
re-released it here.
Have you seen it, Lenore? I Am Cuba?
No, I haven't seen it.
It is spectacular.
It's really fascinating. It's very propagandistic in one way.
Yes.
Namely, it's written by somebody, and it's all about... In four episodes, it's about why and how there was the revolution in Cuba. But the cinematography
is the most amazing.
And it was made in 64.
Yeah, it was made in the mid-60s.
And it was very interesting. I highly recommend anyone go who has a chance. It's gone already. It was out for a week.
It's on video?
I think it's been on video. Yes, it is on video. I've seen it for years on video. This was just a re-release.
Mm-hmm.
Theatrically.
I'm sorry, I missed it.
It's really interesting. I Am Cuba.
Because there's a narrative voice that introduces each segment, and it's a woman's voice saying, "I am Cuba, and this is happening," so to speak. Anyway.
Before or after the missile crisis?
Yeah, so that's 64 is the year of the missile crisis, I think. So.
I think it's after.
It's got to be.
The missile crisis is 62 or something.
Yeah, it was before Kennedy.
It was right. After the Bay of Pigs. Oh, right, because Kennedy died in
62. After the Bay of Pigs, but before the missile crisis.
I think so. Okay, end of sidebar.
I'm happy because that was one movie I saw that I could say something. I am Cuba.
Yeah. I wish we could think of more things to say about this because it was a good movie.
Yeah, I heard it's just fabulous.
It is. Like,
well, I have avoided it. Can I tell you why I've avoided it? It's just.
Which one?
Constant Gardner. I have not been able to bring myself to see it because it just sounded so grim, and life has been so grim, you know, with all the disasters going
grim.
On. That there was no given day that I wanted to go see a movie that sounded that grim, and yet I've heard it's well done. So I'd like to hear more about.
What do you want to hear?
I don't know. Without giving away the whole.
It wasn't depressing, yeah. Grim.
It wasn't. You know, that's
it wasn't
what
like,
I heard.
It wasn't the Holocaust kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know. Abject poverty, although there was that.
There was.
That.
But it wasn't, that wasn't the focus of the film.
No.
It was there.
And it wasn't in your face all the time.
Right.
But it was part of the film.
It was part of the film, yes. It was an important part of the film.
Because that's,
right.
Those were the guinea pigs. Those
right.
Were the victims.
It was like the base of the film, mm-hmm. But the action was usual.
Right.
Not, most of it wasn't. It wasn't all set there, anyway.
No.
I did read something about it that insisted that, obviously, again, this is an adapted book, remember?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it said that, well, I can't say it without giving away the end.
That's okay.
Yeah.
They would not have killed that guy.
Who would not have killed him?
The drug company. They wouldn't have bothered.
Why not?
Because they would have, nobody could have, or would have, or could have stopped the manufacture of the drug.
No. The thing is that they thought he had the letter,
mm-hmm.
And that's why they killed him to silence him. They didn't know
the letter that was written.
Yeah, they didn't know
that letter.
Yeah, they didn't know that it was the doctor who had the letter, and the doctor was going to mail it. Remember, no.
Well, he
gives it to the pilot to mail the letter.
Well, wait. The letter was written by Pellegrin, right?
And
it was sent to.
It was sent to whoever read the eulogy.
That was the brother.
Yeah.
Somebody's brother.
The wife's brother. Wife's brother.
And lawyer.
Okay, but they thought he had. The drug company thought he had that information and that letter. That's why they killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they had no idea that he sent the letter.
Okay. Well, all I remember is that.
And it was incriminating. It wasn't the drug company. It was actually Pellegrin that killed him.
Had him killed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Drug company was going to be in trouble because their testing company. That guy was.
I see what you mean. Okay. All right, you convinced me.
So I should see it, and I won't be totally.
What?
Depressed.
No, not at all.
It's a very good story.
I definitely want to see it.
He's a really important director. In my opinion, he's the hot director. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to say that the scenes of, you know, every so often there'd be a scene of people in poverty and people just walking along the road, you know, exiles or whatever they were. And I found them more compelling in a way, visually, or more convincing than the comparable scenes in Hotel Rwanda.
Huh.
I don't know why.
I think it was the cinematography.
Much more documentary style.
More of a subtlety, you know, uh-huh. Wasn't so in your face.
That's right. I think so.
Right. Huh. Where Hotel Rwanda was kind of not romanticized, but
heavy
dramatized, mm-hmm. rather than this was more of a mm-hmm. documentary type kind of thing.
You know, machine
those,
like that.
Those, that was part of it, yeah. I mean, when Ralph Fiennes gets up and does, you know, that was more dramatic.
Right.
That's,
mm-hmm.
The story was dramatic, but the backdrop of Africa
uh-huh.
was more convincing to me than in The Constant Gardener. I don't know why. I mean, then in Hotel Rwanda.
I think that's a really good point. I didn't think about it. It's, you know, now that you said it, I think I
there's people shuffling down those dusty roads.
Hmm.
Anyway.
I have trouble understanding the dialogue a lot because of the volume and the...
For a long time...
Did you see it at the Kabuki? That's
what I was saying.
Okay, yeah. It's also showing somewhere else.
I saw it here. I saw it on West Portal, and I didn't know anything.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, I'll see it at West Portal.
Yeah. Interesting.
Tip.
Because I never have a problem with the Kabuki, except it's a penny that's for me to get to.
Yeah, I don't. Because the Kabuki is where the film festival has been for years, so I've seen films in every single theater in the Kabuki and don't remember a thing.
Another interesting thing about the film was it had like three kind of main characters where you didn't know where they were coming from at different points in the film. The kind of CIA guy in that country, and then the drug testing company guy, the B guy, the triple B guy, and then the doctor. You didn't know where they stood. You know, and it turned out the doctor was just a doctor who was trying to do good work. And
the black guy?
No, the white guy who he eventually found in the village, who gave him a letter.
Oh, gave him
the letter.
Oh, that being toward the end.
Yeah, and it, you know, I thought he was the evil doctor up mm-hmm. until that point.
Mm-hmm.
And there were other people in that film who at certain times were
mm-hmm.
the bad guys and then kind of the good guys, or they had their good sides, or they weren't sure about where they stood and what was the right thing to do. I thought that was more has to do with the book and the characters in the book than the film, but I thought it was interesting to have all three guys being all kind of not really sure where they're coming from, which is probably true of that author.
Did the woman marry this man because she wanted the man? Or did she marry him because she wanted to be in Africa and she had an agenda?
I think it was a little bit of both, because when the scene where that he says, "I'm going to Africa," and she kind of says, "Well, let's get married then," or something to that effect.
You take know? Me as your
right.
mistress, as
right.
your this, or as your wife.
Hmm.
She gives him the choice.
Oh, interesting. That's right. What do you think about that?
Me?
Yeah, I never thought about that.
I didn't think about that too much.
Because it was so spur of the moment. It wasn't like a normal, you know, they didn't hardly know each other.
I thought it was, you know, showing her as an impulsive person.
Mm, so did I. So did
following
I.
Following her.
But I think,
instinct
you have a point there. It never occurred to me. Listen, even Elizabeth Bennet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In part falls in love with Darcy because of his house. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. She's very impressed with the house. But she's already changing her take on him. We're talking about Pride and Prejudice. Suddenly.
Yeah, you totally lost it there.
But the point is, you know, Elizabeth Bennet is this wonderful, you know, one of the first really strong women characters in English literature. And she rebels and has to marry a man for love. But even she has, you know, that's what I'm talking about, the woman's motivation. Yeah, she sees this house.
Yeah, the reason I asked this was the...
But that's Jane Austen.
Yes.
Jane Austen herself.
I went to see this with Fatima, and she wasn't sure she was following. She couldn't make out, and she has more trouble than I do getting dialogues,
mm-hmm.
I guess. At the end, she said, well, "Did she marry him to go there, or and she loved him. So that was the only comment she made about the movie.
Hmm. Interesting. See, but I guess what I'm saying about it is that it's not like one or the other. Mm. Things can be tied up together. It can be a little complicated.
I'd like him, and while
it helps
have him, I can do my thing.
I love him, and it helps even more that.
But the flip side of that, and this is where I thought the film was kind of weak, was that you didn't see that he really, you know, that there was that love relationship between the two. You know, didn't have the scenes where you could understand that there was love between the two, and it just wasn't a convenient relationship. Whereas at the end, he dies because he's got nothing to live for. You know, he commits suicide, basically. You assume that he does that because, you know, his wife has died and he's got nothing to live for, but I didn't really buy that, is what I'm saying. And that I wish there had been scenes that would have sold me on that, you know, that he loved his wife and that's why, you know, he didn't have anything to live for. The scene where he commits suicide, it's like, I just didn't buy it, you know.
He
does. He takes the bullets out of his gun, and he knows that these guys are coming to kill him.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well,
he made that decision in the plane when he mails the letter off, and he made the decision when he decides to go
to land
out that place in you know where his wife was killed, because he knows that that's
why he does that. He could have left and
he could have gone away. Right, he could have gone away.
He's like the grandfather in the bathtub.
That's true. That's true, too.
Another not completely convincing suicide?
Or maybe he was feeling guilty that he didn't take enough of an interest in her life and what she was doing.
He was opposing her.
He might have saved her.
He was opposing her rather than supporting her.
Right.
Or
but I didn't see that, you know. And that could have made him and his character and his quest to find out why she did this a lot richer. He didn't really feel that he was feeling that guilty about it. About
but suddenly he takes up her.
He does. He does. But the motivation could have been much stronger.
You would have liked more scenes that would have convinced you that
of those things. That number one, he was in love with her, or number two, that he was feeling very guilty that he didn't take enough interest in her life.
Like I said about his acting, about when he felt he was being cuckolded. He felt that she was,
That's being cuckolded. That might have nothing to do with love. There are men can feel cuckolded when they even with women they don't love. You know, just
that's
because they're that's the manhood kind of thing.
You didn't know that.
No,
it's not a testosterone thing. It's a dignity thing.
Honor thing.
Do you, are women not that
it's
way?
It's not the same. It's not equivalent.
It's not the same. Not so if your partner does, what's the difference? Tell me the difference.
I think. Well, first of all, if men cheat on women, it's men being men. You know, I mean, it's a different. I'm not a.
Oops, this is a real side.
Yeah.
And men are.
All right.
I mean, there's not an equivalent word as cuckold.
Pardon?
There's not a female equivalent to being cuckold. It's not the same.
Right.
So there's something.
So it's a matter of language then.
But there's a reason.
What Mary's saying is true, that there's a reason why there's no such word for women, because there is no such condition that, or no such state that women can get in.
Down to biology,
biological.
A woman always knows it's her child. Right. Men do not know.
That's what it comes
and
down
so
to.
And so it's okay. very important to keep the women in line so mm-hmm. that any children
Good
they
point.
Have,
okay.
it's known to be, the father right. knows it's his child.
Okay, so
we're
here
to press on that.
So,
you
okay.
know,
no, I,
okay.
never, I never, that is absolutely true.
Yeah, it's a
that
biological
is,
imperative.
Yes.
Men's biological
I wish I
imperative
thought of
is
it.
To spread.
But it's like the basis of sociobiology.
Exactly. It is the basis of sociobiology.
It's only important if it's really important to know who your progeny is.
That's right.
Right.
Absolutely.
Which is so
all of
society.
Here, social structures are built on it. You know,
yeah.
inheritance and
right
and
mm-hmm.
patrimony and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Okay, Mary. So you're right.
I studied anthropology. Yeah. And linguistics is part of anthropology, as is sociology. So they're all together.
Biology is
fascinating.
A fascinating field.
It's fascinating.
And the resemblance of some of human behavior to animal behaviors and what they're
and the difference
built on and
mm-hmm.
the purpose that they have.
Anyway,
I
but yeah,
the
real clue
it,
that there is
I
no
know.
Equivalent in language to female
yeah.
cuckold.
I think it happens so much more to women, you know.
Yeah, like I say,
yeah.
it's men being men in some sense. Not that I think that, but you know, there's a certain.
Well, you know, it was certainly it was like just understood. Of course, it's you know, it's just the condition.
Right. That's what I. Yeah.
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 It's the condition.
So.
Well, I think I better sign off here.
Okay, well, all right.
Okay, great that you joined in.
Nice to see you, Lenore.
Well,
here
you are. Nice. 2 months.
See
we'll
you
all,
in December.
We'll all convene in December.
All right.
We'll have a holiday party.
Yeah, maybe we'll do another little holiday thing.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
That was pretty frustrating.
It's hard.
More heard, even.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Well, it shows you that it's... Communication has so many aspects.
Mm-hmm.
And
so it's been better.
Yeah.
We have had.
No, it has
well,
been.
Well, Lenore's been present by phone.
Many times. Several.
In other.